He scanned the pine needles, tracking the goblin's trail, so intent he didn't notice the figure slipping up on him from behind. Peter caught the soft crunch of pine needles, turned, expecting to find the spriggan, instead saw a spear flying directly for his chest. Peter threw himself backward. The spear shot past, nicking his shoulder and bouncing down the thin path. He hit the dirt, rolled, and was back to his feet all in a blink. His instinct was to run, but then he froze. There were three of them. Two were elves, but it was the third that held him in his tracks. The figure towered over the elves, taller even than most men Peter had ever seen, thick through the chest and arms, but it was his eyes that held Peter. Peter would never forget those dark, brooding eyes.
"Ulfgar," Peter hissed as he tried to comprehend how the tall boy had turned into this huge, brutish man.
The Ulfgar before him sported a bristling goatee tied into a knot and thick, dark eyebrows. He wore a red and gold tunic with a black elk head emblazoned upon the chest, black leather breeches, knee-high boots, and a long broadsword at his side. He'd let his hair grow long, parted it along his crown, letting it fall straight down the sides of his head to cover his ears. Or his one ear, Peter thought. Ulfgar stared at him, looking like a man who has just discovered a pot of gold. He let out a low laugh.
"It can't be. Avalok has brought me a gift. And look at you."
He laughed again, louder.
"Still a miserable, snot-nosed brat."
He shook his head, sneered.
"It's your human blood. Avalok curses those who don't belong here."
Ulfgar signaled and the two elves slid out long knives and ducked into the woods on either side of the trail. Peter backed away, keeping a close eye on the elves and searching for a path of escape.
"It is plain you have no sense," Ulfgar called, "or you would have left Avalon long ago. Though I have to admit it pleases me deeply to find you here, to find you still alive. Otherwise I would not have the pleasure of killing you."
Ulfgar drew his sword and strolled toward Peter. Peter couldn't miss the way the muscles rippled along the giant's arms, the way he carried the massive broadsword as though it weighed nothing. Peter suddenly felt small and vulnerable, and for the first time found himself envious of growing up, jealous of such strength and might.
"Keep to his flanks,"
Ulfgar shouted in a deep, thunderous voice.
"Don't let him around us. Remember, he's my kill."
Peter caught sight of the spear, the one the elf had thrown at him. It lay on the trail near his foot. He caught it under his toe and kicked it into the air, catching it and sending it hurtling for Ulfgar. Ulfgar hardly blinked, simply slapped the spear out of the air with his sword. The giant let out a laugh.
"Good. A bit of sport will make this more enjoyable."
Peter turned and ran. He lost sight of the elves in the brush, but knew they were keeping pace. He heard Ulfgar crashing along the trail behind him. Peter's heart drummed in his chest. Again, he felt the fear, that of the hunted deer, the same fear as when the men had chased him back to Gaul's Hill. It was almost as though he'd never stopped running. The trees thinned on one side of the trail. Peter could see a swamp and reeds below, down a sharp ravine.
"The reeds," Peter thought. "I can lose them in the reeds."
He left the trail, sprinted toward the drop. An elf leaped into his path. Peter didn't have time to do anything other than crash directly into him. Peter heard a wounded oof as the two of them tumbled. Peter came out on top and tried to break away. The elf grabbed his arm and clung on. Peter jabbed a thumb in the elf's eye, tore his arm free, got one foot under him when a big black boot connected with his midsection.
Peter left the ground, slammed up against a tree. He heard Ulfgar's laugh, caught sight of the giant's grin. Then Ulfgar punched him in the face, right between the eyes. Peter reeled, lost his feet, and sat down squarely. Ulfgar snatched Peter up by the hair. He pulled out a notched hunting knife, held it up to Peter's face.
Let's start with an ear, shall we?
Peter grabbed Ulfgar's hand and bit deep, felt cartilage crunch beneath his teeth, and tasted blood. Ulfgar yowled, yanked his hand away, lost his grip on both the knife and Peter. Peter snatched up the knife and slashed out wildly. Ulfgar stepped back, had his sword in his hand in a flash. The two elves fell in on either side, knives ready. Ulfgar flicked the blood off his thumb, glared at Peter.
Enough games.
Peter threw his knife. The blade bounced harmlessly off Ulfgar's shoulder, but bought Peter a needed second. He leaped for the ledge, slid, and rolled down the ravine, crashing into the mud and reeds. He glanced up, saw the elves skidding down after him, Ulfgar following. Peter splashed into the reeds, pushing between the tall, misty stalks, trying to lose himself within the maze of stems and shallow black pools, pushing farther and farther until he could no longer hear Ulfgar's curses. The mist thickened and Peter began to question his way. He'd done a very good job indeed of getting lost. He kept moving, and his instincts paid off as the terrain began to change. The ground became gray and firm, and the reeds thinned out. But the mist continued to thicken, and Peter found himself within a wall of swirling fog, unable to see farther than 20 paces in any given direction, afraid to take another step, lest he became lost forever. His head throbbed. His brow was swollen and sore from where Ulfgar had punched him. His ribs hurt with every breath. He gently probed them and winced, wondered if they might be broken. The mist felt as though it were moving in on him, suffocating him. He closed his eyes, trying to calm himself, trying to figure out what he should do, and it was then he caught a familiar scent. He inhaled deeply, just a trace of honeysuckle and pond water. The lady? Peter felt a slight warmth against his chest and opened his eyes. The necklace, Mabon's star, began to glow, and Peter caught a faint glimmer ahead in the mist. He approached. Before him, a dusting of gold glittered just above the clammy gray earth, gently weaving and flowing like a lazy creek. Peter remembered the lady spoke of her mist. Is this her doing? He followed the path. Peter found thoughts of the lady dominating his heart. At one point, he could swear he heard the distant echo of her voice calling, only it wasn't his name. It was Mabon. How many times had he snuck up to the lady's garden? How many times had he lain hidden near Avalok's shrine in hopes of a single glimpse of her? And in all those years, only once had he seen her, there in her courtyard, talking and laughing with Hissy. When she'd laughed, Peter had smiled while tears fell from his eyes, his desire to be near her so vast. His whole body ached. The mist began to thin, and Peter heard the lapping of waves and got his first whiff of the sea. The gray earth and mist gave way to a drizzly, pebble-littered beach. He stood facing a rocky ledge. The ledge was topped with scraggly spruce and pine. Peter saw no sign of tropical lushness, no sign of fairy kind whatsoever. The air here was cold and damp. Sharp smells bit at his nostrils. He heard strange bird calls. Yet, somehow all of it was familiar, and it dawned on him just where he was. He felt a chill, and not from the harsh wind. Peter realized he was back in the world of mankind. Peter climbed to the top of the ledge and looked back. The shifting mist clung to the shore, giving no sign or clue to the magical kingdom hidden in its midst. His first instinct was to head back into the Lady's Mist, to return to the safety of Avalon's forest. He shook his head, grimaced. "There's no safety there," he thought. "Not for me. Not anymore. Ulfgar will hunt me relentlessly." He looked up the coast, the endless miles fading into the winter grayness, a world of men. "What's here for me?" he wondered, and again grimly shook his head. "Death, or at best a life of hiding in holes, like Gaul." Peter fought back the tears. "Is there no place for me?" He wiped angrily at his eyes. "I have to go somewhere, at least for a while. Maybe one day Ulfgar will grow tired of hunting me and I can return. Maybe, but not now. Not this day." Peter headed over the rise, felt a tugging on his heart, and stopped. It was her, the lady. Even here he felt her. It was as though she was part of his soul, and the thought of never seeing her again was almost too much to bear. "I will come back, and if I have to kill Ulfgar, I will find a way." He moved inland, crested the ledge, and a wide, sprawling valley opened before him. Peter caught a telling trail of smoke far below, could just make out a cultivated field and a cluster of buildings. The old fears snuck up on him. He could almost still hear the sounds of the men and their dogs chasing him through the woods, surprised by the intensity of those long-ago memories. He suppressed a shudder, took a deep breath, and pushed his chest out. "They'd best be wary of me," he stated. "I'm a creature of faery, a shadow in the dark. I will cut their throats as they sleep." He clutched his belt and remembered he no longer had even a knife, and that the world of men was full of wolves, bears, and hill cats. His lips tightened into a thin line, and he started down the slope. The shadows were growing long by the time he found the road, the dirt overturned with fresh horse tracks, plenty of them, and Peter heard Tagnost in his head, the old troll warning him of his foolishness. But Peter trailed the road, keeping to the bushes, slipping soundlessly from tree to tree, the way he did when trying to sneak up on the wild fairies. He smelled smoke and then stumbled upon the body. It was a young woman. She lay on her back in the ditch, the torn remnants of her dress trampled into the mud. Her legs splayed wide apart, the horrible wound between her legs crusted with blood and bared to the world. Deep slashes riddled her small breasts, and dark bruises stood out against the pale skin of her thin neck. Peter clenched his jaw and stared into her unblinking eyes. Looking closer, he could see she was barely more than a child. He wondered what sort of games she'd like to play, wondered what a child could have ever done to deserve such a death. Peter felt his dread give way to anger, to hate. He remembered why he never wanted to grow up, never wanted to turn into one of them. The rays of the late afternoon sun cut across the tops of the pines and the shadows began to deepen. Peter left the girl and continued to trail the road. The next body Peter found was that of a man hanging from a tree. He was badly burned, and a crow pecked at the charred flesh hanging from his cheek. A sign hung around the man's neck, painted with a white cross. Tied to his feet were the heads of a woman and two children. Peter saw no sign of their bodies. He could see the village now. Could just make out the gray shapes in the deepening shadows. The acrid smell of smoke saturated the air. He came upon a man lying in the middle of the road, the side of his head crushed, his blonde hair clotted with blood. He still clutched his spear. Peter crouched next to him and pried the spear from his stiff fingers and a knife from his belt. Across the road lay a scorched pasture, in its center a smoldering pile of burned bodies. Peter guessed there were close to 50 bodies, and every one that he could see had been decapitated. A company of crows cawed and pecked at the choicest morsels. He heard Tagnost again, telling him to leave now, but Tagnost had also told him that curiosity would be his undoing. Peter smiled at the memory of the fretting old troll, stood, and headed toward the village. Peter crept along the ditch, keeping low into the shadows. He slipped past a burned-out barn, only its blackened framework still standing, then came upon three wolves feeding on the body of a woman. Her protruding belly had been slit open and their snouts were wet from gorging on its contents. As Peter neared, the wolves lifted their heads and gave him a warning growl. A tiny infant's leg hung from the jaws of one of them. Peter gave them a wide berth and continued into the village. Most of the structures had been burned to the ground. Here and there, a few timbers still smoldered. Other than the distant cawing of crows, the village was still and quiet. Peter slipped within the burned hulk of a stable, crouched in the shadows, surveying the town from between the slats. A huge cross of freshly hewn timber had been erected in the center of the square. A man hung limply from its beams. A rope stretched taut across his neck, chest, and beneath each arm. Great iron nails had been driven into his hands and feet. He wore a long robe adorned with dancing animals and swirling symbols of the sun, moon, and stars. His robe had been slit up the front. Thick rivulets of congealed blood ran down the insides of his legs, forming a dark pool on the ground. Peter could see that his genitals had been butchered and stuffed into his mouth. No less than 30 heads hung from the cross, men, women, and children. In the deepening shadows, several of them appeared to stare at Peter as though they might start talking to him at any moment. Peter didn't like it, didn't like anything about this place, decided there was nothing here for him after all. Decided it was time to leave. But he heard the heavy tromp of hooves heading his way, then the deep voices of men, and ducked back down. Two men came into view, leading a horse. The horse pulled along a line of tethered children. The men were wearing chainmail beneath matching blue tunics with white crosses on their chests. Short swords hung from their belts. Peter counted 8 children. Older children, for the most part. Their hands were bound behind their backs and a rope was looped around each of their necks. They were covered in soot and mud. Several were bruised and bleeding from ugly wounds. They had despondent, haunted eyes, the eyes of children who'd seen too much.
"So there you are,"
came a man's call from somewhere behind Peter. 2 more soldiers came out of the woods, heading right for his hiding spot. Peter felt sure they were talking to him. He froze, not so much as breathing. But they tromped right past. There was a girl between them. She was tall, long in the leg, but still a girl. She wore a simple rose-colored dress, spattered in mud, 1 sleeve torn away. They pushed her roughly along ahead of them and joined the men by the horse.
"We found a few of them hiding up on the hill," one of the soldiers said.
He was stout and bald. One of his legs was shorter than the other, and he walked with a pronounced lurch.
"The others got away, but we got the one we wanted," the man grinned.
The other 2 soldiers took an appraising look at the tall girl and returned his grin. A wiry man with a black cap and a toothless maw said,
"No harm in a little sport while we wait for the Baron."
The men chuckled. A 5th man came out of the woods from the south and met up with them. He was shorter than the others, but with thick muscled arms and a dark bristling beard. He wore a helmet, while the other men did not. A white plume stuck up from its crest.
"No luck, South," he said. "I'm done hunting these brats. It's a waste of effort, I say. Well, they make terrible servants anyway. You can whip them till your arm falls off and still not beat the wildness out of them. If the Baron wants the rest of them, I say he can root them out of the woods himself."
They all nodded.
"Aye, sir, they're like rats, the way they hide in holes and under rocks. Spend a month and not find them all."
"Truth be, the winter will get the rest of them anyway."
"Where's the Baron and the guard, sir?"
the toothless man asked.
"Where'd they get off to now?"
"They'll be back soon enough," the bearded man said. "The scouts located another heathen village in the hills. Just a few huts, really. The Baron took the guard. They intend to do a bit of converting."
They all laughed.
"Perhaps, sir, some fun while we wait?"
the bald soldier said, and shoved the tall girl forward. The bearded man looked the girl up and down, nodding. He pulled off his helmet, then his gloves, dropped them to the ground. He gently touched her cheek with the back of his finger, then grabbed a handful of her long auburn hair and tugged her head back. Peter got a good look at her face. Her eyes were light green and full of fear, her mouth wide and thick-lipped.
"Little witch child,"
the bearded man said, and ran a hand down her neck, squeezed her shoulder.
"Do you drink blood and dance around your horned god?
You do, don't you?"
The girl said nothing. His hand trailed down her waist, down her leg. He squeezed her thigh.
"Why, I bet you crawl around on your hands and knees before him, naked and grunting like a pig. Then bear your ass to the forest beasts, don't you?"
He shook her.
"Don't you?"
The soldiers all snickered, and the toothless man pawed at his own lips. The bearded man smirked and pushed his hand under her dress, shoving it hard up between her legs. The girl let out a cry and slapped at him, raking her nails across his face. The man let go of her hair, tried to grab her wrist. She tore loose and ran for the trees. Peter jumped to his feet, hands tight around his spear.
"Demons," he thought. "Mankind are all demons."
The toothless man leaped after the girl, caught her by the hair, spun her into the dirt. Two others fell upon her, pinning her arms to the ground. The bearded man touched his face, looked at the blood on his fingers, and spat.
"You little cunt."
He strolled over to where they held her on the ground, undid his belt, letting his trousers drop. He knelt between the girl's legs, pushing her dress up over her hips. Peter slipped from his hiding place, crept toward the men in a low crouch, knife in one hand, spear in the other. The girl spat at the bearded man, tried to kick him away from her. He struck her twice in the face, splitting open her lip, then punched her hard in the stomach. She let out a choked gasp and stopped kicking.
"That should take the devil out of you," he said. "Now, two mugs of mead to the man who can make her squeal the loudest. Who's in?"
They all grinned and grunted. Peter hefted his spear, gauging the range as he prepared to throw, then saw a figure come running out from one of the houses, heading right toward the soldiers. It was a boy, one of the pagan folk. He couldn't have been older than 12, carrying a spear at waist level and rushing the men at a full run. The boy's eyes were wide. Peter could see he was terrified, yet still he came. The bald soldier saw the boy, let out a shout of warning, but a second too late. The spear drove into the bearded man's back, punched out his chest. The bald soldier made his feet and struck the boy, knocking him down. He yanked out his sword, brought it up. and that was when Peter threw his spear. The spear hit the bald man in the back of the neck, tore out through the front of his throat, driving the man face first into the mud. Peter let out a howl and was on the next soldier before the man could free his sword of its scabbard. He jabbed his knife into the man's side and ripped it across his gut, tearing upon his stomach. The man's entrails poured out from the wound, steaming in the winter chill. He let out a low groan and dropped to his knees. The two remaining soldiers came for him. Peter easily ducked a swing meant for his head and another for his chest. These men were big and strong, but Peter was faster. So fast that these lumbering giants seemed to be moving in syrup. He drove in beneath one swing, bringing his knife up into the man's crotch, felt the blade punch deep into the man's groin. The soldier let out a horrified wail, and Peter's eyes gleamed. He liked the sound, craved it. There was only the toothless man left. He looked from his dead and dying comrades to Peter, stared at him as though he were a demon, some pagan god seeking vengeance. A wicked grin spread across Peter's face. These huge, brutish men who had struck such terror in his heart, had haunted his nightmares for an age, turned out to be little more than blundering beasts. The battle had turned into a game, the most exciting one he had ever played. Peter licked his knife and let out a low growl. The man turned and ran. Peter whooped and raced after him. He caught up to him in a heartbeat, leaping upon his back. He plunged the knife into the soldier's neck, tore open his throat, and rode him into the dirt. Peter watched the man's lifeblood gurgle and bubble from his open throat. Watched until the man's eyes glazed over. A weak whimpering drew Peter to his feet. One of the soldiers still lived. The wounded man was clutching his groin, trailing a wide swath of blood as he tried to crawl away. Peter picked up a fallen sword and advanced. To his surprise, the pagan boy snatched up a spear and rushed the wounded man. Peter stopped. Watched as the boy drove the spear into the man's back, not once, but over and over. The boy kept jabbing well after the man had stopped moving.
Bastards!
The boy screamed.
Fucking wicked bastards!
Finally, the girl made him stop. The boy began to cry, his whole body racked with sobs. The girl looked at Peter.
Who are you?
She asked. The boy stopped crying, pushed the girl behind him, and pointed the spear at Peter. His red-rimmed eyes were laced with fear, but the spear was steady.
What do you want?
Peter studied the boy. The boy might be scared, but he was ready to fight him to the death. It was plain on his face. Together they'd just killed 5 men. Peter glanced over to the children tied to the horse. They had the same hard eyes as the boy.
8 of them there,
he thought.
10 altogether. Maybe a handful more hiding in the hills. Desperate, dangerous children without a home. Plenty of swords and spears lying about.
Peter tapped his chin.
Wonder what Ulfgar would think if a clan of wild kids sprouted up in his forest.
Peter grinned. Peter dropped his knife and stuck his sword into the dirt. He took a step forward and planted his hands on his hips.
My name's Peter. I'm looking to make some new friends.
The boy stared at him in wonder. The girl spoke up.
I'm Wendelin.
Peter walked right up to the point of the boy's spear, stuck out his hand. The boy looked from Peter's hand to Wendelin. She nodded. The boy lowered his spear and slowly stuck out his own hand. Peter took it, shook it mightily, and smiled. And the boy and the girl and the other children all smiled back, because Peter's smile was a most contagious thing.
"Say," Peter said, "I know a place we can go. It's a heck of a lot nicer than here."
"Peter, this is madness! You must take them back," Tagnost said.
"No,"
Peter replied and crossed his arms.
"They're my friends."
"You've no idea what you're doing. No idea. The Horned One will never allow their kind here."
"Come see our fort,"
Peter said, waving for Tagnost to follow him down the trail.
"I will not. I'll not have anything to do with this folly. Peter, if Ulfgar finds out, the elves will hunt you down. They'll kill all of you."
Peter whistled, and five kids dropped from the trees, spears in hands, teeth bared. Their wiry nude bodies were covered in war paint. They surrounded the troll, growling and glaring at him with wild golden eyes.
"Let them try," Peter said. "We'll feed them their own noses."
He raised his spear and howled. The kids howled back, began to clack their teeth together and jab the air with their spears. The troll rolled his eyes, then batted one of the spears away.
"Don't point that at me, you little wart,"
he snapped at a small boy wearing a raccoon skin over his head like a mask.
"These are our woods now," Peter said sternly. "They belong to us, the devils. From here to Goggy Creek is now Devilwood. Any who enter risk our wrath."
Tagnost let out a sigh and shook his head.
"Devils? You mean halfwits? Peter, there's so much here you don't understand."
The troll glanced at one boy a bit older than the rest.
"The magic of fairy can be poison to their kind. If any of these children are too old, they'll turn. Have you any idea what that means?"
Peter gave the troll a suspicious look.
"The magic can twist them, turn them into murderous demons."
"Don't try to scare me. It won't work. Not this time."
"Peter, you have enemies enough. People with too many enemies don't live long. I'll not stay around to see you hanged."
Tagnost stomped away. Peter heard the whistle, snatched up his sword, and leaned around the tree. The whistle meant Ulfgar was coming. Peter did a quick check. The devils were all in place and well hidden.
"We're ready,"
he told himself, and realized his hands were shaking, but not from nerves, from excitement. He listened to his heart pounding away.
"I'm alive, more alive than I've ever been. The game is on. The greatest game ever. I've 30 devils now. 30 brave, deadly warriors."
How long had they practiced and prepared for this very moment? 2 seasons? 3? These children were done with drills, done with living in fear of men, of elves, of Ulfgar. These feral children would run no more. They were ready to fight, ready to kill. They were devils now, and this scrap of scraggly wood was their forest. Ulfgar came into view, leading a squad of 8 well-armed elves. They strolled right down the main trail, just as Peter knew they would, Ulfgar no doubt believing he was about nothing more dangerous than a fox hunt.
"Well," Peter thought, "this fox intends to bite."
When they were within 20 yards, Peter stepped out into the trail and leveled his sword at Ulfgar.
"This is Devilwood! This is my forest!" Peter shouted. "Leave!"
Ulfgar halted and lifted a gloved hand. The elves moved up on his flanks. He looked Peter up and down and sneered.
"Seems Mirkvjor has become infested with vermin.
Surrender yourself and the other pests, and I promise you leniency.
Peter could see they carried no nets, ropes, or other bindings, only swords and spears. He knew Ulfgar's leniency amounted to nothing more than a quick death.
Perhaps you didn't hear me, Peter said. Or is it hard to hear with just one ear?
Ulfgar glowered.
The time for fun and games is over, little runt.
He pulled a long, wide sword from his scabbard, spun it once, and started forward. The elves began to fan out. Peter whistled, and the woods came alive with howls. Kids dropped out of trees and sprung up from the bushes, leveling spears, swords, and hatchets at the elves, all 30 kids snarling and clacking their teeth. The elves looked about wildly, their thin, narrow eyes filled with shock and surprise. The devils jabbed at the air, pressing them back into a tight knot. Ulfgar spun around and around, appeared stunned, confused, as though trying to comprehend how the tables could have turned so quickly, so utterly. He clutched his long sword with both hands and stumbled backward into the elves.
You have to the count of four to drop your weapons, Peter cried. One!
The elves glanced at one another.
Two!
The devils hefted their spears, ready to throw. There was no playfulness on their faces, no mercy, only the eyes of children that had seen more than their share of brutality and death.
Three!
The elves tossed down their spears.
What are you doing?
Ulfgar cried. Three devils shoved their spears to within an inch of Ulfgar's face.
It's your call, Ulfgar, Peter said.
Ulfgar's sword trembled in his hands, his face twisted into a knot of rage, his dark eyes glowering. He threw down his sword with a cry of frustration.
Take all their weapons, Peter said. We can use some good elven blades.
They kept the elves under guard as several smaller kids swarmed around and relieved them of their swords and knives.
Thieves, Ulfgar said and spat. Nothing but the lowest caste.
Peter jabbed his blade beneath Ulfgar's chin.
Take off your clothes. Everything.
What?
Ulfgar's dark eyes flashed.
That's what, Lord Peter, Peter said. As in, may I, Lord Peter, or Lord Peter, may I?
Ulfgar glared at him.
Oh, don't you remember the drill?
Peter asked. He could see by Ulfgar's face that he did. Peter pressed his sword point into Ulfgar's neck, just enough to prick the skin.
Take off your clothes, now.
Ulfgar tugged off his boots, then his tunic, a thin shirt of mail, his pants, until finally he stood before them all completely nude. The devils snickered and jeered. Ulfgar's face flushed red, his lips trembling with outrage.
You will regret this.
Peter smacked the side of his face with the flat of his sword. Ulfgar reeled, almost lost his feet. He spat and wiped his mouth, looked at the blood on his hand.
You forgot to address me as Lord Peter.
Ulfgar squinted. Peter raised the sword.
Do it now! And maybe, just maybe, I will let you leave with your balls still attached.
Lord Peter,
Ulfgar forced out between clenched teeth.
Good. Now turn around. I owe you something.
Ulfgar no longer seemed capable of speaking. He just shook his head. Peter flicked the blade across Ulfgar's cheek, opening a small cut. Ulfgar flinched, let out a weak cry.
If I have to ask again, you'll lose your other ear.
Ulfgar turned slowly around. Peter reared back his sword and hit Ulfgar across the buttocks with the flat of the blade. The loud clap echoed off the trees. Ulfgar let out a cry. Peter hit him again, then again. The kids winced with every blow. Ulfgar let out a sob, stumbled forward, and fell to the dirt.
"This is Devilwood,"
Peter said, and leaned over next to Ulfgar's ear.
"This is my forest. The next time you set foot in these woods, I will shove my sword all the way up your ass."
Peter kicked Ulfgar hard in the buttocks.
"Now get out of here!"
Ulfgar pushed to his feet and limped down the trail. The devils chased after him, hooting, howling, and barking as they pelted him with pine cones and dirt clods, chasing him all the way to Goggy Creek. A sharp chirp brought Peter back to the present. He caught a flash of green. Fairies, three of them, leaped off a branch and flew away up the trail.
"I believe news of our visit precedes us," Tengnost said with a wry grin. "Keep your eyes open. The welcoming committee should be arriving soon."
Peter glanced about the terrain, spotted a rocky ledge just off the main trail.
"We should wait over there," Peter said. "Those rocks will give me a good head start if I need to leave a bit early."
The troll nodded and the two of them strolled toward the ledge.
"All will be fine," Tangnost said, "so long as you keep your head about you and don't antagonize him. He can't possibly raise his sword against you, not after his own father granted you a place among fairy fold. He's honor-bound to at least hear us out."
"Honor? Ulfgar has no honor."
"Ulfgar does have honor. In many ways, it is his greatest undoing. He's tied to what he believes is his duty, no matter how distorted that may have become. He'll honor his father's clemency. But I don't have to warn you to be careful. You know he'd love to kill you, and if he can find a reason to claim you a threat to Avalon or to the welfare of the lady, he will try."
"From what you've told me, the lady's little more than his prisoner."
"Peter, you distort my words. I never implied any such gibberish."
"You said he never allows visitors, or for her to leave. When was the last time you saw her outside her refuge?"
Tangnost's great furry brow creased.
"I can't say exactly. I don't know if she ever leaves."
"See?"
"I don't believe that's Ulfgar's doing, though. When the Great Horned One died, part of Modron seemed to have died as well. I saw her once, briefly, sometime after the great battle. She didn't recognize me. Not sure she even saw me. She stared through me as though asleep with her eyes open."
"Well, all I know is if you're putting any faith in him, then you're the dunderheaded half-wit. Ulfgar's a coward. It'll be just like at the Marrow Cove."
"No, not a coward. Trapped in the past. Ulfgar inherited his father's physical prowess, but not his will. He cannot rise above his father's ghost. It wasn't his choice to stay behind at the great battle. His father had him swear an oath to defend the lady and her garden against whatever should pass. Ulfgar still holds to that and will not leave her forest. Even with the destruction of all of Avalon at hand, he believes it is his duty to remain with the lady."
Peter let loose an ugly laugh.
"He hides behind duty like it's his mother's apron."
"That may well be, but—"
Peter put up his hand and cocked his head.
"They're here."
Just on the top of the rise stood Ulfgar, flanked by 12 narrow-eyed elves, all carrying swords and spears. The elves' leathers were the color of the forest and well-worn, while Ulfgar still wore the golden-red tunic. The tunic was a bit threadbare now, but it still bore the black elk-head crest.
"A meddler and a human-born," Ulfgar called, "and neither welcome here. Trespass in the lady's wood carries but one punishment. Death.
Chapter 14. Clan. Nick swallowed a spoonful of porridge and winced. His throat was still sore, but the troll had been right. Except for a throbbing in his temples, he felt better. Cricket and Danny winced as they ate as well, but they were all so hungry they finished every bite. The wounds were still hard to look at, but Tsukiyu had rubbed some sort of smelly ointment on them, and the redness and swelling were subsiding.
"What do you guys know about these flesh-eaters?" Nick asked.
"Not much," Cricket said. "They won't tell me a thing, just that we'll find out when we're ready."
"Just what the hell is that supposed to mean?" Nick said.
"I don't like all these secrets. Doesn't that bother you guys? I mean..."
Leroy sat his bowl on the table and plopped down beside Nick.
"Crazy day, huh?" Leroy said, his tone upbeat, almost cheerful.
Nick looked away in disgust, staring into his empty bowl. Nobody spoke for a long moment. Cricket sighed.
"Abraham told me about what you did, Leroy." She stuck out her hand. "Thanks."
Leroy's face lit up. He shook Cricket's hand.
"Hell, the whole thing was just crazy, that's all."
Danny tried to straighten his glasses, pushing at the broken frame as he weighed the situation. He didn't put out his hand, but he did say, "Thanks," and it sounded to Nick like he meant it.
"Hey," Leroy said, "I know I can be a real shit sometimes, but if you guys can cut me a little slack, I mean, what I'm trying to say is, I'd really like to start over with you guys. What do you say? Friends?"
Cricket and Danny took a moment, nodded to each other, and finally both of them said, "Friends." Nick remained quiet.
"I'm going to be a devil now. Devils look after each other," Leroy said, and stuck out his hand to Nick. "Right, Nick?"
Nick didn't look at him. He just poked at his bowl with his spoon.
"Right, Nick?"
Leroy repeated, now with a noticeable edge to his voice.
"No," Nick thought. "I don't have to play this part anymore. I'm done being dicked around, done with Peter and his games, and I'm most certainly done with Leroy."
Nick got up from the table and went over to the roots, leaving Danny and Cricket looking perplexed, and Leroy very unhappy. Nick closed his eyes and let the warmth from the porridge spread through his body. He was sure things weren't over between Leroy and him, but he'd deal with that later. Right now, his head hurt, and he wanted some space to sort things out, but he only had a minute before Cricket and Danny came over and sat with him.
"So," Cricket asked.
Nick was silent.
"So what's the deal with you and Leroy?"
"Nothing."
"Yeah, right," Cricket said. She looked like she might burst at any minute. "Come on, you gotta tell me. What did he do now? Huh? What?"
"Nothing," Nick said curtly, and wondered why everyone seemed bent on driving him crazy tonight.
"Just drop it, all right?"
"Man, what's up with you?" Cricket said. "Leroy saved your life. Seems you could cut him some slack. Think about..."
"Do you guys miss home?" Nick cut in.
"No,"
Cricket said without hesitation. "Not a bit. Things were really fucked up at home. My dad..." She stopped, looked like she wanted to add something more, then shook her head.
"Deviltree is my home now."
Nick wondered how bad it could be that Cricket felt safer here among these cretins than with her own family.
"I miss Cocoa Puffs," Danny said.
Both Nick and Cricket rolled their eyes.
"I'm not trying to be funny,"
Danny said as he tried to straighten his glasses.
"Wouldn't you kill for a bowl right now? Or maybe some microwave popcorn? What I really miss is freaking toilet paper. Never would have thought toilet paper was man's greatest invention. You know what else?
I miss my Game Boy. I also miss my stupid little dog. She's a pug named Piglet. She had something wrong with her nose and made a snorting noise all the time, just like a little piggy. Funniest damn thing. That little monkey-faced dog snored louder than my dad, too. We had to shut her in the downstairs laundry at night so that we could sleep. I sort of miss my friends at school. I miss my mom and dad, I guess. But, he laughed, most of all, I miss my goddamn Game Boy. Nick and Cricket stared at him. Finally, Nick asked, Danny, why'd you run away in the first place? Huh? Oh, because I set the school on fire. After I saw all the fire trucks and police cars, I thought it might be a good idea to get out of town. You did what? Cricket and Nick asked at the same time. Well, Danny said defensively, I was pissed at that sour old tit Mrs. Carey. She's the one that took my Game Boy.
So you burned the school down? Nick asked.
Yes. No. Well, sorta. I tried to. I only managed to burn up a bunch of bushes and part of the roof before. That's great, Danny, Cricket interrupted. How about you, Nick? Why'd you leave?
Because I had to.
Why?
It's complicated. Some guys moved into my grandmother's house and turned into a bad scene.
How bad? Cricket asked.
Nick rolled up his sleeve, showed them the burn on his arm. Cricket looked at him.
That's bad.
Well, I've got my mom to thank for that one.
Your mom did that?
No, but it was her fault. It was her idea to rent out the rooms in my granny's house. Hell, it was her idea to move back to Brooklyn in the first place. We used to live at Fort Bragg, down in North Carolina, but after my dad died, Mom decided we needed to move in with Granny. Said it was because money was tight. That was the same excuse she used to talk Granny into renting out the downstairs rooms. And that's how Marco and his pals ended up in our house. Marco's the one that burned me. Nick shook his head.
I mean, I could see that those guys were shit the first time I met them, right? But Mom, she was so glad to have some tenants, she just bent over backward for them.
Turns out these guys are fucking street-level drug dealers, and here's my mom making them feel right at home.
I mean, can you believe that?
Soon we had these kids coming and going, running dope all over the place. A regular operation working out of our back porch. By then, even my mom had caught on. I mean, it wasn't like these guys were going out of their way to be discreet. They pretty much acted like they owned the place.
Didn't she call the police?
Cricket asked.
No, that's just it. She wouldn't.
We got in an argument about that. She said Marco had told her if she called the cops, he'd make sure it looked like she was in on it. If that happened, the state would take me away from her or seize Granny's house. Bunch of crap like that. I think Marco had laid it on thick. Had scared her to death. Anyway, Marco must have got wind of our argument because it was shortly after that him and his pals gave me this. Nick tapped the burn mark.
So you left?
You bet.
I fucked up their setup and got out of there.
Cricket looked at him, horrified.
You left your mom and grandmother behind? Alone in that house with them?
No. I mean, yeah, I left them, but
don't make it sound like I deserted them. Nick, that's terrible. Think about how scared your mom must be without you there.
She's the one that brought them in, Nick said angrily. She's the one that wouldn't call the cops. What was I supposed to do, stay there and put up with Marco's crap? The guy was going to kill me.
Nick, think about it. They probably told her they'd hurt you and your grandmother if she did anything or told anyone. There's no telling what all they said to her.
Cricket shook her head.
That poor woman is in such an awful situation. What's she going to do? I can't believe you just up and left her there like that.
You don't understand.
You weren't there. It's not like you think, it's... He stopped. Never mind. Just never fucking mind.
Nick got up and stomped away, crossed the chamber and went into the privy. He pushed the door shut and dropped the latch. He pressed his back against the door, ignoring the clicking and rustling coming from the toilet. He stared at his reflection in the broken mirror and saw a dozen angry faces glaring back at him.
Fuck her, he thought. She doesn't know what the fuck she's talking about. I didn't abandon my mother. I'd never do that.
He tried to push away the thoughts of his mother alone with Marco, but could think of nothing else. He saw her face, could see Marco and his pals, Marco's bulging, bloodshot eyes, his beastly grin, could still hear the way they'd laughed when they'd burned him. If they didn't mind burning him, what were they capable of doing to her? To Granny? With him gone, they could do anything.
God, he thought, she must be so scared.
And on top of all that, Granny could barely even get out of bed these days. Mom's got nowhere to go. No other family, no one else to help her.
What have I done?
His face clenched up and an ugly sob escaped his throat. He pressed his face into his hands and began to cry.
Mom, he whispered. I'm so sorry. I'm so damn sorry.
Ulfgar drew his broadsword from its scabbard. His thick, muscled arms twitched, seemed to ache to cut the boy in two. He took a step down the path, toward the ledge where Peter stood, hands on hips, legs wide, glaring down at him.
You were warned, runt, Ulfgar said. I will have your head.
Tagnost shuffled between them.
Lord Ulfgar, if I may...
Peter whipped out his long knife.
Come and get me, you one-eared fuck!
He shouted and let loose a wild hoot.
Peter!
Tagnost cried and shot the boy a nasty look. He wished Peter wouldn't make it his mission to remind potential allies of prior mutilations.
You can count on it, Ulfgar growled and spat in the dirt.
We didn't come to fight,
Tagnost cried, wondering how things could be spiraling out of control so quickly.
Take him!
Ulfgar shouted. The elves all drew their swords.
Fools!
Tagnost thundered and slammed his staff down, his powerful booming voice echoing through the forest.
Squabbling among yourselves like children! It is little wonder that we're losing this war! Now put your swords away, all of you!
The elves hesitated, looking to Ulfgar. Ulfgar's dark eyes fell on Tagnost.
Mind your place, old goat. You give no orders here.
Forgive me, Lord Ulfgar,
Tagnost said, and made a slight bowing gesture.
But please, just hear my say.
I've had enough of your schemes, your distortions, your half-truths.
The flesh-eaters are burning Whisperwood,
Tagnost said. Surprise showed even across the elves' stone faces.
Liar, Ulfgar said. Whisperwood can't be burned.
Find a vantage point, and you can see the fires for yourself.
Ulfgar narrowed his eyes.
Peter being here, armed with nothing more than a knife, is proof enough,
Tagnost said.
Do you believe he'd take such a risk were the need not dire? If the lady were not in imminent danger, not to mention setting aside his pride and old grievances to appeal to you?
The troll took in a deep breath.
He may be lacking in diplomatic skills, but his sword and life are sworn to the lady. If he is willing to take such risks, can you not at least hear us out?
Go on then, speak your bit,
Ulfgar conceded.
Then I will decide if he lives or dies.
Tagnost clutched his staff, struggled to stifle his temper.
No, Lord Ulfgar, he said levelly. Not today, you won't. Need I remind you that it was your father that granted him a place in Avalon? He has earned the right with his own blood and the blood of his clan. If you should harm Peter here and now, under these circumstances, it will be nothing short of murder.
Ulfgar's eyes flared.
Say your bit and be done, he growled.
Don the horned helm,
Tengnost said.
Take up your rightful place and lead us into battle. The flesh eaters have grown weak. With your father's sword leading, we can drive them into the mist. The lady's guard, the devils, even the witch and her horde, all of them, they will rally around the horned helm. They will follow you, Ulfgar. You!
Ulfgar flinched and took a step back. He glanced about almost like an animal searching for an escape. Whisperwood is not my concern, he muttered.
Do you believe they will stop with Whisperwood?
Ulfgar was silent for a long moment. My duty lies with the lady. I'll not leave my post on the whimsy of some interlopers.
You hide behind long-dead oaths, Peter shouted from atop the ledge.
Ulfgar glowered up at the boy.
If you wish to speak of duty, then carry the sword, Peter said. Fight the lady's enemies before it's too late.
Do not even pretend you have the right to talk to me, child thief, Ulfgar hissed.
Peter sheathed his knife, leaped down the ledge, and headed up the path toward Ulfgar.
Tread lightly, young Peter, Tengnost warned.
Peter strolled boldly past Ulfgar and right up to the line of elves.